Well, Norway copied the Alaska Permanent Fund, and it now totals $664 billion. The Alaska Permanent Fund's about 44.5. Now let's talk of other countries copying it. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The legacy of Jay Hammond is growing international, and that's what we're talking about today. Our statewide phone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 855-0842, email at alaskapublictalk at alaskapublic.org. Jay Hammond was writing a book when he died, and that book is our subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik. PROVimaging.com.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, we're finally getting off of the subject of towing winches and Arctic oil and moving on to the always fascinating subject of money. People are putting their applications in for the Permanent Fund dividend, and it turns out that Jay Hammond was writing a book when he died called Diapering the Devil. And that book has been picked up now by the Center for Global Development and published in a book called The Governor's Solution. And so we have the editor of that book with us, and we also have a longtime comrade of, would that be the right word, comrade of Jay Hammond's, Rick Halford, former state Senate president.
Nice to be here.
Would that be accurate, comrade?
I would say that he definitely was a comrade. He was an inspiration. He was a lot of things and a very, very good friend.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you with us here, Rick, and out in the public. I remember when the Conference of Alaskans was going on, Frank Murkowski was essentially trying to get a fiscal plan for the state by putting together all the various funds that we had in some way and figuring out how to have some kind of a stable source of funds for the state government, and it never really worked out, but it was very interesting to be in the middle of winter up in Fairbanks with these people sort of emulating the creation of the state constitution. And Jay Hammond wasn't a delegate there, but he made sure to be there, and you also kind of watching out for the permanent fund. Did you feel that maybe the move was on to tap the fund at some way in that whole thing that the new governor had decided to
Well,
do?
The permanent fund is the piece of the wonderful legacy that we have in natural resources that goes forward to the future. And remember that we, on an ongoing basis, spend more than 3/4 of that legacy in this one generation, and have spent a huge amount of money. So I think Hammond felt, and I certainly feel, that it's not time to put the 25% that's supposed to be passed forward to the future on the table to avoid tough decisions today, whether those tough decisions are budgeting, whether they're taxing, whatever they are. The ownership and the public trust to the future of at least a portion of that wonderful legacy should be carried forward. And I think that was Jay's point. And that was the point that I believe that even with the support of virtually every chamber of commerce and interest in the spending side, that initiative went down by something like 83%. People did not believe that it was time to be using the permanent fund income to support government, and felt that the dividend was a far better use through individual decisions.
Well, the book we're talking about is The Governor's Solution, and the editor is Todd Moss of the Center for Global Development, formerly with the State Department, and somewhat of an Africa specialist. Todd, welcome to Talk of Alaska. How are you doing today?
Good, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And you're one of the reasons, I mean, your outfit, the Center for Global Development, is, well, looking at the board of directors, I'd have to call it quite nonpartisan.
Thanks. We try quite hard to make sure that we've got a good balance of Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, and it seems that would it be fair to call it a think tank?
Yes, we're a think tank. We're an independent research organization that works to try to find ways to make public policy more friendly toward economic development around the world.
Okay, so you want more development.
We do, and really I think the interest that we've had in Alaska's experience is that what you've gone through in Alaska, which is you had this tremendous luck of discovering oil, and you're trying to figure out the best way to spend it and how to get that balance of spending and savings. And this is a problem. You know, Alaska's not unique. And, in fact, with very high oil prices recently, we're seeing just a huge number of countries, including some of the world's poorest and most poorly governed countries, discover oil. And they're right now facing this question of, okay, we've hit the oil lottery. What do we do? Where can we turn to get lessons on ways to avoid some of the problems? And we have, at the Center for Global Development, we're trying to extract some lessons for Alaska that may be relevant in a lot of these countries.
And the answer seems to be, hey, how about pumping some of that money to the people?
Well, the problem that we've seen in so many countries that have had this oil bonanza, places like Nigeria or Venezuela, is that very often the local population sees very little. Much of the money is either wasted or stolen, and there's been very little way for these populations to hold their own governments accountable for what they're doing with the money. So this Alaska model, where a good chunk of the funds are first put offshore into a professionally managed fund, and then where some of those earnings are shared with the population on an equal basis, is something that we would think would be quite attractive to countries. And so we've been looking at a number of cases across the world to see where this might make sense. And what I find most compelling about the Alaska model is that a lot of the politics that you had in the 1970s when you were debating this about, well, we have other ideas, we want to build infrastructure, you know, different industries had ideas on how to spend this money, is exactly what is going on in the new oil economies today. And it took Governor Jay Hammond working with a circle of allies to have the vision and to push through the idea of the dividend, and we're now looking for the Jay Hammond of East Africa, the Jay Hammond of East Asia, that would try to test this model in their own country.
Lots of luck on that. It is a sort of a unique form of statesmanship. I think many, many Alaskans would agree that Jay was kind of one of a kind. One thing that he was adamant about, and one of the big regrets of his entire political life, was allowing the legislature to wipe out the income tax. Of course, they probably would have done it over his veto anyway, but he didn't veto it.
Yep.
And I'm wondering your thoughts about that, because I've certainly heard Jay's thoughts on it. He expressed them right on this program several times and said you need to have a clawing back thing.
Well, you know, I think in the chapter, Governor Hammond is very, you know, very clear and explicit that he thinks that was a big mistake. And really, I believe that is the crux of why this is such a good idea in these other countries. Most of these new oil economies, particularly in Africa, have a very, very small tax base. Almost nobody in East Africa and some of these smaller West African countries pays taxes. And if you had to set up a national transfer or national dividend system so that every citizen received a bit of the oil income. You also have to create a national ID system. You would have to create a pipeline to connect every one of those people to a bank account. And if you're doing that so that you can pay them the dividend, you can also use that to build a tax base. And you can claw back some of that money. That's, in fact, the exact phrase that we use, is clawing that back, in that people start to feel that the money going into government and that government eventually spends is actually their money. That is the basis for good government.
Rick Halford, Jay Hammond really would have rather that more money went to the dividend and then it was retaxed. In other words, with an income tax or whatever, that would be how the government would get quite a lot of its funds, and that way there would be more accountability in there. Would you have gone along with that, you know, when you were in the legislature, to have more money go to the permanent fund? I know you were one of the leaders in taking some of these random accounts that were out there and putting that money into the principal of the fund.
Well, we added, I think by legislative appropriation, something like $7 billion
to
the principal
of
the fund over a number of different deposits. But increasing the amount obviously would be a good idea. As I said, we're spending 75% plus of the combined wealth in one generation of a million-year endowment of dead dinosaurs, whatever you want to call it. But basically, I think a higher percentage and then some kind of a system that integrated it all would make sense. But, you know, we're talking about Jay Hammond's and this is the time we think of I Have a Dream. Jay Hammond's dream was that the permanent fund be an example for how to deal with and empower people who were blessed with resources, but not necessarily blessed with the power or the share or the equality and everything else. And one of the things that was a battle in the permanent fund is the advocates on both sides are not necessarily happy with simple equality. There are those who want things to be much more progressive, and there are those who want things to be much less progressive. But equal distribution gives exactly the same thing both ways. And the only thing that really skewed that in the Alaska model is you included children. So by including children, you picked up a big boost in the bottom end of that, and you ended up with something that gave Alaska the distinction of not being one of those places where the rich were getting richer and the poor were getting poorer. In fact, it leveled out a big piece of that equation.
I always think of Papa Pilgrim when I think of that. I always think of this hillbilly coming up here with all these kids. And that money was one of the main forms of income for that family.
Well, it's endowed education for a lot of kids. It has built churches. It's built lots of different things. And it's a grubstake for people that don't really deal with the welfare system, but it's fuel. It's the fall and what happens in rural Alaska when the dividend comes out. It is an amazing economic engine. And if you compare it to a tax, taking something from the permanent fund distribution versus $100 million in, just as an example, for $100 million that you take out of an income tax, a lot of it comes from non-residents. It comes from adults. It comes from people who can pay it. If you take the same $100 million out of the permanent fund revenue stream, you're taking almost half of that from children. You're taking it from the poor, the retired, from everybody in that equal distribution. So an attack on the permanent fund distribution is the most regressive possible resident-only tax you could ever come up with in Alaska, as that is now part of the economic base and the distribution of wealth in the state.
Wow. We're talking to Rick Halford and Todd Moss, the editor of The Governor's Solution. And there's one commonality that's pretty clear here, Todd, which is you got a nation or a state or a entity of some sort with a whole lot of people that don't have much. And so you don't have a tax base because they don't have anything to tax. And so if you take the wealth from the resource and distribute it to them, you've got something to tax.
Well, that's true, although you still, even people at very low incomes, it's still worth trying to tax them, even if it's just a token amount, because what you do by bringing people into the tax system is they start to view government resources as their own and not as some gift from some faraway capital, maybe funded by foreign companies or foreign governments that they have no attachment to. And when people feel that they're putting in their own money, then they have that new leverage where they can say, hey, wait a minute, you know, the teacher isn't showing up for school or the road is impassable, but we paid for those things, for those services. It changes the entire dynamic, and that's exactly the kind of dynamic that you would hope to create in some of these new countries.
We knew all along if you didn't put more fill along that curve, we were going to have trouble with that road.
Right.
But we just let you do it because it wasn't really ours. But it was
right, ours.
We'd make sure it was designed right.
Well, that's a critical point because you don't want it looked on as welfare from some multinational corporation that's extracting your resources. You need to recognize it is your return for your resources. And there's another part that I think Jay Hammond had in mind that also people recognize that what is going out of Alaska is theirs. It's common property resources. And it's an interesting feature that Hammond was able to translate something that Wally Hickel said eloquently in the whole owner state thing. What Jay Hammond did is he made the owner state individual. He gave people a personal stake in the stockholder state, not just the owner state, but any of the jurisdictions with the resources in public hands, that whole change is very, very valuable.
Let's go to Bob, joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob.
Oh, thank you very much, Steve. And Rick, I haven't seen you since I was 20 years old when I was just a page in the second session of the 11th legislature. You know, all legislation starts with an idea, which is a great thing about our legislative process. And I think you probably remember, I happen to be related to the guy that had that idea to create a public trust, which became the permanent fund. He never liked the limelight and never wanted to become a politician, but I remember, Rick, you were a good guy. And, you know, what I'm listening to here is a good thing. All those years ago, when I was there, it really opened my eyes to Alaska's political position in the world and this public trust, which is our permanent fund, and the dividend. And I'm glad to hear your voice, Rick. I haven't seen you in many, many years, and I doubt if you'd recognize my voice, but I know you knew my brother quite well. They used to call me his better half back in those days, but it is, you know, for people that are poor to have this dividend and this great fund that we have in the permanent fund. It's been a very good thing for our state. You know, I kind of see the oil companies as giant mosquitoes just sucking the lifeblood out of our state, and luckily we get this dividend back. And thanks to the folks that were in the House then, Bill Parker and Clark Greening and others that pushed it through the House and then the Senate and on to Jay Hammond. He was one of a kind. And, I'll never forget when they invited the House personnel to lunch there at the governor's mansion. And, of course, the governor was the first one in line. And he went and sat. They had these little round tables that only sat about five people. And the other pages were all afraid to sit with him. I don't know why, but, man, I was the first one to sit down with the governor. I wanted to listen to what the gentleman had to say. And it was a very enlightening experience. But, what I believe that we have, this is a good thing to have this, but you were talking about other countries. And in Norway, you know, they developed a fund similar to Alaska sometime after our permanent fund was developed and signed into law. And their permanent fund has what I understood, somebody told me, $764 billion.
$664 as of today.
Yeah, yeah. And they get, well, they're a pretty heavily taxed nation, I guess, from what I understand, but they get about $20,000 or so for their dividends.
Oh, I don't know about that. True, Todd? Is there a distribution to individuals in Norway, Todd?
The distribution is strictly for pensioners.
They do have
very, very high tax rates, and then they have a very, very elaborate social support system, including a pretty generous pension system that comes out of their sovereign wealth fund. In fact, their sovereign wealth fund is called the Norway Government Pension Fund.
Yeah, they changed the name of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, from things I've heard, it's made some of the residents of Norway quite affluent in Europe now, and they travel around. I'm just wondering if I can ever afford to go up and see Anwar. I checked today to see what that cost, and it's about a $2,400 bill just to fly in and fly out, you know. And I think all Alaskans should be able to travel up there to see that beautiful country.
Well, I guess anyway, you could get dropped off there at someplace around Attigan Pass and walk to it, I guess.
Well, I might just do that.
All right.
I might just do that sometime. But I'm glad. Thank you for taking my call and letting me be a part of your conversation.
All right, Bob. I appreciate that memory of sitting down, being a page and sitting down at the table with Jay Hammond. Do you remember that day, Rick Halford?
I don't remember that day, but I appreciate the comments. Thank you. I think one of the things we need to think about is how the permanent fund actually developed, because we had the constitutional amendment, but every step of the way there was strong opposition. You know, the industry was opposed to the creation of the fund because they felt that if you save any, then they're going to end up having to leave more in state. And of course, it's their obligation to their shareholders to leave as little as possible and allocate as much as they can to their shareholders. But the investment standards were the first major fight once you had the constitutional amendment. Because if you'd used it to, and the example of the day was, if you used the permanent fund to make a loan to build an Astrodome at Hulukachuk, you still wouldn't have the money. And the next piece of it was, you know, what are you going to do with inflation? What are you going to do with the silent thief
that
will take it away?
Very important.
That was a big fight. And it was people like Elmer Rasmussen, Arlis Sturgiluski, Hugh Malone, people that stood up for the future against those who wanted to spend all of the money. They were not only opposed to the dividend, but they wanted to spend everything that they could from any source.
So I think Tom Finkel still say that today.
Well, I think he believes that. And
yeah.
I think he probably, as I recall, he might have written the ballot proposition language against the creation of the permanent fund. And people confuse taking taxes from one generation and passing them on to the next and taking royalty. It's the ownership share that the permanent fund is made up of. It is the farm itself. When you go through and sell the value of your land acre by acre to keep heating the farmhouse because you're not taxing enough, working enough, creating enough, you end up with nothing. And at some point, the people of Alaska are still going to have to educate kids in groups of 20 or 30 on the Kobuk or wherever it is at very high cost. And the oil will eventually be gone. This trust of the future is designed to answer that in part and does it. But every step of the way, investment strategy, inflation proofing, the details of the dividend, the hold harmless in the dividend for those on welfare, including children in the dividend, every one of those pieces was hard fought. And there were a lot of different opinions. It was always Hammond's leadership and the leadership of a lot of other people. As I said, Elmer Rasmussen was very, very helpful in the inflation fight because he was very credible and people understood what he was saying and made the right long-term decisions. But democracy always overrepresents the present and underrepresents the future. So each one of those was hard fought.
And there had to be some people that were thinking about the future there. and insisting. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Rich in Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rich.
Hi, Steve. I've been an aid worker for the last 20 years, and I either follow or meet Alaskans or Norwegians selling the idea of a fund. Now, most recently, I've been in South Sudan, which is an oil-rich country. I've also run into them in Azerbaijan and other places. And they make a very powerful argument that you're making, Todd, but there is the other side, and I'm just wondering how you would respond to the other side. And the other side basically deals with three things. One, by putting that money into a permanent fund, you increase probably the value of the country's currency, making it difficult for people not in the oil industry to export, and therefore making development very hard. So, for instance, if South Sudan has a strong currency, South Sudan has the potential of having great agricultural exports, but none of its neighbors can afford what they would export. It's got the possibility of being the breadbasket of Africa with the Nile River and fertile soil, but because of the high value of the South Sudanese pound, if they ever got to exporting oil again, it would create a problem in development. Secondly, it would represent capital flight outside of South Sudan. And that capital is desperately needed, for instance, for eradicating malaria. Where I've worked, malaria was just completely debilitating for the entire workforce, and international aid wasn't enough to keep up with, for instance, evolving mosquitoes that are now biting earlier in the evening, making bed nets less effective, things like that. And then the third thing is corruption. The permanent fund would give really, I mean, you've got a horribly corrupt culture already. It would be a playground for corruption. So, you know, while it's a good idea, and I tend to favor it, my question is, how do you deal with these three areas, capital flight, corruption, and what it would do to strengthen the currency of the country, making exports nearly impossible?
Mm-hmm. So those are terrific questions. It just so happens that just yesterday I received the first draft of a report that we asked for, looking at South Sudan and the feasibility of this dividend idea in a place like South Sudan. So I hopefully we'll have that up on the website for free in a couple of weeks, and you can take a look at it. Look, the issue on currency strengthening is an issue. It's sometimes called Dutch disease. I don't see also with capital flight and corruption. These are all potential issues. And the question, though, is not whether the dividend whether these are problems that the dividend creates, but what is the alternative? And the alternative is that the government would just receive all of the funds, put it into the black box of the budget, and spend that money in a way that we wouldn't really know what happens to it. And would that be better or worse? And in each case, having the dividend be the significant receipt of those funds, that they would go directly to people, is going to be better off than having it go to the government and spend it in a way that no one would even know where it goes. And so let me just deal with each of these quickly. On the Dutch disease issue, the way to fight that is to hold your earnings in U.S. dollars, just not convert it into local currency. That is not what the government would do if it spent it through the budget. So you would want to have, just as Rick had mentioned, the design of the dividend and how you would structure that. You want to make sure that you're not creating macroeconomic shocks. On the corruption side, again, putting it into the budget is how you have corruption. It goes in to build projects that are never built. Maybe it doesn't even arrive in the budget. But if it's going to the directly to the population, that should create a lot more incentives for the population to know, wait a minute, how much money is coming in and what is my fair share? And just one last thing that I think is very exciting in a place like South Sudan, but virtually every country, which I don't believe you're doing in Alaska, is that just within the last few years, it's been possible to use biometric identification, either fingerprints or iris scanning, to positively identify each individual. And you can link that biometric information to a single account. And then that would be how you would do this on a national scale. In a place like South Sudan, where there is no national ID, there are no bank accounts, you would have to build all of that from scratch. And you can do that now with biometric ID, with mobile money, where your bank account would actually exist on a cell phone. You don't even need a bricks and mortar bank anymore. And you could do that in a place like even in a place like South Sudan.
I sense the new world order showing up here also.
Well, you know what's interesting about it is that in a lot of countries, we take identification for granted in that we can always prove who we are. But in a lot of countries, including a lot of these new oil countries, people have they don't legally exist. They can't prove who they are, so there's no way for them to gain benefits. So while we might be worried about an iris scan so that we could have a driver's license or a passport, this in a sense, it's a luxury that a lot of other countries don't have.
All right. Rich?
What about Capital Flight?
Well, I guess, so on the Capital Flight, I mean, are you, again, I'm not sure what the alternative is. Is your concern that people in South Sudan would receive, let's say, a dividend of $100 a year and that they would just take it overseas rather than spend it locally?
No, the concern is that when you build a fund, you have to invest it overseas before you get income to distribute to people. And so that... anything that's invested would probably be invested overseas, not being invested in South Sudan or any of the other countries.
Sure.
Are you thinking of skipping that and just directly distributing the money without setting up a fund?
No, I think you'd have to set up an offshore fund, both because that would give you the oversight of the money. So you would know what was coming and where it was held. And then actually, the reason that you want to hold it offshore, when you want to hold it outside the country, is to deal with that exact currency issue that you mentioned first. If you hold all of that in local currency, you are gonna drive that up massively, and you will drive out everything else that's not in the oil sector. I mean, say goodbye to all farming, all manufacturing, you know, and it also is a way to help deal with the inflation issue.
And that's my concern, and saying goodbye to all of that. How can I get a copy of the book? Is it available in bookstores, or can I get it online?
Yeah, so it is online on the Center for Global Development's website, which is cgdev.org. And if you click on the Governor's Solution, we've got, you can purchase it that way. And then Governor Hammond's chapter called Diapering the Devil is available for free. It was the wishes of the Hammond family that his portion of the book be available to everyone free, and that's why we've put it up there.
Yeah.
Could you repeat the URL one more time, please?
Sure. It's www.cgdev.org, or if you Google Center for Global Development, it'll pop up as the first one. And the name of the book is The Governor's Solution. And it has Governor Hammond's, a long chapter by Governor Hammond, which is based on his unfinished manuscript from 2005, just before he passed in 2005, and then some newer research on the Alaska Permanent Fund from Professor Goldsmith at the University of Alaska, and two papers on how this model might work in Iraq, which was the country that Governor Hammond had in mind when he started writing Diapering the Devil.
All right, Rich.
Yeah. On South Sudan.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hello. The same URL is where I can pick up the paper on South Sudan in a few weeks.
That's correct.
Thank you.
All
great.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rich. Rick Halford.
I think there's one point that we have to keep in mind. In all these places, including Alaska, when you have government collectively on behalf of the people owning incredible values in natural resources, corruption follows money. And money will go into the government through the democratic process and try to influence all of those decisions. If you're going to stand up to that, you have to have a way to build a constituency. And that was a big part of the whole the whole permanent fund thing and how it worked. But we shouldn't think, in Alaska and in other places, influence follows the money. It does today. It did through this whole period. And it's why those who wanted to maximize what they took to other places oppose the system. And they will oppose it in any country that you try to create it in. And you will have to deal with the corruption questions. But the corruption questions in areas that hold long-term public trust of incredible value are most often in the influence inside and on the government as the holder of the common property.
Thank you. It's Rick Halford, former president of the Alaska State Senate, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
We're talking about the governor's solution, which contains Jay Hammond's last manuscript, and it's fun. It's fun reading how he started really the origins of the permanent fund and the dividend are all the way back in Bristol Bay and trying to figure out how to get more value captured locally from the sockeye fishery. It goes all the way to back to that, forming boroughs, raw fish tax, jurisdictional issues, and sticking with it. And it's the only narrative I've really seen that traces that entire history. It's been incorporated into the book, The Governor's Solution, which is advocating such a system for other countries to find themselves resource-rich as a way that they might get some of that to the people where it could help form a tax base maybe leave something a bit more lasting, because that's the deal. As Rick Halford has been telling us over and over again, this is for the future. The whole idea of the permanent fund is for the future. And, Norway's got a much bigger than we have, but they got more people, too. Dave joins the program from Cordova. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dave.
Good morning, all. I almost feel like we should have a moment of reverential silence to honor and applaud the Republicans of statesmanship who are now in such low numbers, especially in our legislature. Thank God there's still a few left there. But having been involved and very committed myself to the formation of the permanent fund in my own little ways, I really appreciate where we've gone with it. And appreciate ongoing efforts to keep it intact, and it's always under assault. But I think one of the things that should be brought up in light of the comments about Norway's fund being so much larger than ours, with much less oil throughput and what a decade later startup, and they're having modeled theirs on ours, is I question the wisdom of our money managers insofar as who they do actual business with. Norway didn't take the terrible hit we did in 2009, and we're still stuck at this $30-40 billion number after all these years. And I'm wondering how we, and one other thing, they do it with a socially conscious investment policy other than their tar sands involvement. And I'm just wondering how we can get ourselves to build this thing into something larger than what we've ended up with after all this time? Thank you.
Well, there's a good question. You got any thoughts on that, Rick Alford?
Well, one of the things, of course, they don't have a general distribution. So they have a higher level distribution as a pension to a very small number of people by comparison. And it's not, therefore, part of the underlying economic base and equality in their jurisdiction, as the permanent fund is in Alaska. So there's some difficulty there. I think something about, and I don't know this, but from the things that I've understood, Norway was also protected just by the size of their fund by comparison. And the permanent fund did better than a lot of other smaller funds. There's a lot of size considerations in what happens in a downturn. But the permanent fund system isn't perfect. It's just a whole lot better than any of the alternatives that we've seen and what's happened with the rest of the legacy of oil to Alaska.
Todd Moss, any thoughts about what is the best investment mix? I mean, they've tangled with it at the permanent fund. And as was noted by David, that we have quite a bit of, you know, there are some social responsibility guidelines with the permanent fund and more, really, for with this fund in Norway. But they sure got caught by, we sure got caught in Alaska by the real estate bubble and the subsequent stock price drop.
Well, look, I think everybody got hit. You know, when there's a financial crisis, everybody hurts from that. I think the important point is that the strategy of the fund, whatever your offshore fund is, needs to be matched to what the objectives are. If this is really to just maximize long-term growth, then that would make sense. If the idea is to create a large income stream to be used today, then that will alter the kinds of investment decisions. But what I think is most useful in learning from the Alaska and the Norwegian model is that it is at arm's length from the government decision. You do not have current politicians.
Yeah, Rick Halford is nodding his head on that one. It's just, you know, the corruption can just so easily ooze its way in there. And I think in the case of Norway, and certainly in the case of Alaska, there's been a tremendous effort to keep it above board. The management is really a level of integrity beyond question.
Right. And you really want to, in a sense, protect politicians from themselves by not giving them discretion over when to spend and when to save, because they will always be under tremendous pressure to spend now and under very little pressure to act prudently. So you want to have that. And I think there's a very telling example in Nigeria right now. Nigeria, a couple of years ago, decided that they were going to start to save a good chunk of their oil revenues for when times got tough. And they wound up building up nearly $40 billion into this special account. But it was held onshore and controlled by the politicians. So they were able to use this to pay off their debt. That was good. But then when the government changed, the new government spent that down entirely. So now Nigeria is trying again, and they're going to do it with an offshore fund that is modeled much more closely to what Alaska and Norway have done.
So you're going to have
will work.
So are we likely to see a dividend in Nigeria? Do you think they'll go that far?
Right now, the government is not talking about a dividend to the population. What they're talking about is a fund that would then pay an annual a portion of the profits back into the treasury, so that then the government would get just that current income rather than access to all of the savings. So it's maybe it's a quarter step in the right direction, but still a move in the right direction.
Alaska has had these pots of money, these loan funds and so forth, and they tend to find it, utilities, also publicly owned utilities, find it prudent to take a bit of their earnings and turn it back to government as almost ransom so the government doesn't raid the fund. We've seen this over and over again. It's pretty funny. So that might be the best strategy. Harry joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Harry.
Good morning.
Harry Crawford.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having Rick on and bringing this subject back up again. There were a number of us that used to say that when Jay Hammond passed away, well, that they're going to come after the permanent fund. But as long as we have Rick Halford there as the articulate spokesperson that he is, I think it's pretty safe. But I wanted to make a couple of points about the permanent fund and the dividend. You know, of all the 50 states, 49 of them, the gap between rich and poor got larger over the last several years, except for one, and that's us, and it's because of the permanent fund dividend. I think the very best thing that the legislature could do in this legislative session is to take $10 billion of our savings that are in the constitutional budget reserve and the statutory budget reserve and other funds that are stashed there and put it into the permanent fund, into the corpus of the permanent fund, where it will really and truly be protected.
Well, I guess they do. I think that the guidelines for these funds tend to be they're invested in the same way the permanent fund is anyway, aren't they? I think mental health trust is done that way.
They don't have the people out there protecting it like they do the corpus of the permanent fund.
Yeah. Well, obviously that's true. Rick Halford, you got a thought on that?
In the statutory budget reserve or the constitutional budget reserve can be gotten out by the statutory budget reserve is just a simple majority vote, and the constitutional budget reserve is a three-quarter.
Right, takes a bigger majority.
But I've seen it come out way too many times for many times things that weren't that important.
Yeah, well, they'll be tapping it this year, I'm pretty sure.
That is quite possible.
No, I mean, not the CBR, but the
reserve will go first.
Yeah, because that's the way it's structured. So, Rick, you were nodding your head to that one.
Well, of course, any time that I could in the time that I was there, I supported, offered, worked on additional deposits to the principal of the permanent fund. I am not there now, and I don't know the details of the funds. I would say that there is some money that could be put into the principal of the permanent fund and still leave an operating reserve for an emergency in the pipeline or something like this, a shutdown. So I think we have more reserves than we need, and we should be putting more of them into our commitment to the future, rather than holding them for current spending than we are. But that balance is something that I don't know the answer to because I'm not there. And actually, one of the things that Jay Hammond always said is, you know, if you're not there now, don't get too far into the details of the decisions they have to make. But yes, as a general rule, passing money forward through the principal permanent fund is a good idea.
And of course, Harry, it would boost the dividend if it was in the principal.
It would boost the dividend, and there will come a day, I think, when we'll have to rely on the permanent fund. But that day is not here yet. I mean,
it's definitely not here. It's $111.
Pardon me?
Crude oil is $111 today. $112.
Yeah, but the pool's getting smaller up there on the North Slope.
Oh yeah, yeah. Harry, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
All right, it's Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority was created by the Alaska State Legislature to develop, stimulate, and advance the economic welfare of the state and further the development of public transportation systems. The authority has completed required environmental work to date, and the Federal Highway Administration has given its approval needed to move forward. There's more information at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
It's Talk of Alaska. Jay Hammond used to talk about how we needed the permanent fund because that way there wouldn't be so much building of infrastructure that nobody was paying any attention to how you're going to maintain it later on. And so that drove, I think, his thinking on this. So you get more people and you get more infrastructure, and it's going to take money to take care of all that, and you needed some way of putting the brakes on. And so the permanent fund and the dividends were sort of a part of a braking mechanism. We're seeing the idea of the permanent fund being spread around now by the Center for Global Development. The editor of the Governor's Solution at the Center for Global Development is with us, and Jay Hammond's portion of this book is available on their website for free. You can just go in there and read it right off of the screen. Todd Moss. And Todd, I understand that you're going to continue pushing this idea. In other words, you're going to get more specific. We heard about the Sudan example there. Mm-hmm. But you're not done with this idea. This is just kind of the beginning.
Well, we've been thinking about this idea and writing about it and talking with governments in a number of countries about this idea, because every time a country strikes oil, they're faced with this dilemma of what do they do, and the default is to do nothing and just spend the money. And I'm actually writing another book right now, which lays out how this could work and why it would be a good idea, and to overcome some of the common objections that people have to it. But as we were drafting this book, I was contacted by Larry Smith on behalf of the Hammond family with really a gem that he sent me this book by Governor Hammond. We had not planned on publishing this, but when I started reading Governor Hammond's words and the experience that he went through in Alaska, it struck me as just a terrific read. I mean, the humor and the character of the governor, who unfortunately I never had the chance to meet, just comes through in a way that I found very, very compelling. But even the bigger point, I think, is that a lot of the political barriers that Alaska faced in getting to the Alaska Permanent Fund and to the dividend are precisely the same political problems that those advocating this idea face today. The objections, even that we've heard on the radio today, are almost the same thing that I'm hearing when I go to capitals, particularly in Africa, where people have some of these very same concerns. And we thought it was important to get this out as a piece of history that we could draw on, to hear firsthand from Governor Hammond about why he thought this was such a good idea and how he did it, and especially the mistakes that he made. And so that's why we were really thrilled, and I'm grateful to Larry Smith and to Governor Hammond's family for allowing us to publish this, and that it will be part of the permanent record.
Let's go to Glenn, joins the program from Copper Center. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Glenn.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, I want to talk about something about capital flight and the tax. I'm not sure that this was anything that Governor Hammond discussed, but we hire hundreds of people from out of state to fill all these jobs, making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're here for 5 years, and then they leave and go spend it someplace else, probably laughing at us all the way because we don't tax them. And I'm not sure. We had that Murkowski Commission fill the gap on at that time a budget deficit, but it was unanimous that we should have an income tax, but that was unacceptable to Murkowski, so he brought in Cuddy to use some sort of propaganda to change their minds.
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't think you're preaching to the choir here, because the income tax would never be popular, but the fact of the matter is that this is the only way that you get accountability, which seems to be as simple as that. I haven't put Rick Halford on the spot on this. Were you around when we wiped out the income tax?
I think I was. I think that was the first term I was in the legislature. I think the Libertarians had an initiative to take it off, And I think it went through the legislature with pretty strong support on both sides. I don't recall how I voted. I expect I probably voted to take it off. But if you look today at what we've learned about the entire process, I think going back to a broad-based contribution to government makes sense. And there's things that you can do with it. The whole non-resident question is, it's a real and aggravating question to most Alaskans. But you can have offsets for property taxes paid in Alaska. You can have offsets for sales taxes paid in Alaska. You can set up a system that captures a lot of non-resident dollars going out of the state and have people involved more directly in what's going on. I think that's the kind of things you have to do to make something sell in terms of any broad-based tax.
Let's go to Charles, joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Charles.
How are you doing? I know you're close to the end here, so I'll be quick. We have, with our permanent fund, we have personal dividends that go out. I was just curious about setting up community dividends for community development, especially in rural Alaska, where you end up with communities that don't have a lot of a taxable income base. I was just wondering if that's ever been something that's been brought up as setting up a section of the fund.
Well, the AML, I think, actually was favoring. You know, they had a platform on that for a while. But what do you think about a municipal or a development dividend of some sort?
Well, of course, we have development dividends today in municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and so forth that goes out to municipalities. But most of these things operate on a per capita basis, so the amount of money that goes to the small rural areas is very small. And the debate in the legislative process would always be the same in terms of how you appropriate these things. It's easy to come back to a per capita formula. In things that you actually have a cost of living component in, they are hard fought. There's huge elements in the area differentials in education, for example, and you get right into the middle of that. You know, it's easy to say that every school kid should have an apple, but when you try to decide how to get that apple and it costs four times as much in one place as it does in the other place, you have difficulty. Individual decisions in this piece of the money have been what worked best so far.
Todd Moss, I want to thank you for being with us on Talk of Alaska.
Great. Thank you for having me.
All right. Rick Halford, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And I want to thank our listeners next week on Talk of Alaska. Annie Leonard, author of The Story of Stuff.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Providence Imaging Center, with Doctors Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com.
And by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.